This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Live from Toronto, it's Saturday night's main event. I am John Pollock along with Wei Ting.
Where are you going to do that? Are you going to do that every one of these?
Every single one.
Okay.
I'm going to do it next weekend after the Royal Rumble. How are you, Wei?
I'm doing well. Yeah, doing all right. It's just another Saturday night chatting about professional wrestling.
I mean,
Saturday night for the rest of my life, I will be here talking about professional wrestling.
I was going to say, if the day ends in Y, there's a good chance that we're watching some kind of wrestling and talking about it afterward. How tired of me are you after some of these weekends where, I mean, you had to talk with me last night. Here we are back another night. Thank God for Sunday, right?
I'm not at all, honestly, John. This is the easy part, you know? Sometimes it's like maybe consuming all the content. That can be slightly difficult, but even that's not so bad. Honestly, we live very blessed lives, you and I.
I'm not a drag on you, am I, on these Fridays?
A drag? What do you mean?
I'm getting a lot of people are loving my enthusiasm on these SmackDown shows.
Oh, you're referring to a YouTube comment, aren't you?
more than a YouTube comment. I'm not going to lie. I'm telling you, folks, when we do our worst show of the year at the end of this year, like 3 hour SmackDowns, it will take a monumental collapse of some other program to top these 3 hour SmackDowns because these are just unbearable.
Well, I honestly don't think you're alone in the criticism. I mean, and I also don't think like folks
have to defend these SmackDowns to me. I'm not saying these are the worst produced wrestling shows of all time, but I am sorry. If you're going to get this extra hour, you're going to have to earn it.
Oh, it's got to be good. And last night was not good. Now, the week before, I actually thought was a good addition of SmackDown. But last night was not a good show at all.
And the week I was off.
The week that you're, yeah. What's so weird about last night's show is that we essentially had a go-home show for tonight. So you had a three-hour go-home show for a two-hour show, which is just like really, really strange.
Like, so far, the format is like we're just going to take our regular segments. We're just stretching everything out longer. And I don't know, there's some stuff that I am happy that a Motor City Machine Guns gets a 10 to 12 minute match every week. But then there's a lot of stuff on this show that is just simply, well, this wouldn't have made the cut in the 2 hour era, but now we have an extra hour. And yeah. You know what? I will occasionally watch Saturday Night Live. And at the end of it, you know what? There might be some sketch performers that don't get on this week. Doesn't mean I want a 3 hour Saturday Night Live. It's a hard 90. I want the best. I want the best in there.
Can you imagine a three-hour SNL?
Like, actually, they're going to be doing a three-hour SNL for their 50th anniversary in a few weeks.
Three hours of sketches?
All the alumni are coming back.
It's a special edition. It makes sense.
Yes.
Imagine if you just had the regular cast stretched out to 3 hours every single week.
Dude, 90 minutes. SNL frequently, they don't fill 90 minutes with great quality. Like, there's a very similar system in Saturday Night Live to the WWE format.
This is not the SmackDown review. This is not the SmackDown complaining about being, you know, dragging or being snarky review. We're here to talk about a two-hour show. What did you think about the pace of tonight's Saturday night's main event?
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. I thought so far these two Saturday night's main events in this era, I think they've been fun, entertaining two-hour shows. I didn't think that this one had the fanfare, the gravitas of the December show, which really felt like a big deal that they had built it up to be. But tonight you got 2 hours that went by really like seamlessly. I didn't feel like there was any drag on this show. I didn't feel any of the matches were awful. Like, we had a bad finish, but a great angle afterward. Mm-hmm. The 2 hours flew by. If you missed this show, I didn't think there was anything of grand consequence to this show, but this was a very easy 2 hours of, I would say, like, pretty good wrestling throughout it. Nothing that was, blowing your mind, but everything had a purpose to it, and like, that was, I thought this was just a very, very easily digestible 2 hours.
Yeah. I think, you know, two episodes in, we sort of understand the place of where a Saturday night's main event fits within their sort of grand system. You know, you have your very top level PLEs at the very top, and that, of course, includes a WrestleMania, you know, Rumble. You got your B shows, which at this point are like maybe closing the gap between a B show and like, you know, an A level show, especially some of these like international ones that they're making feel bigger. And then somewhere between a regular edition of a TV show and a B-level PLE exists a Saturday night's main event. So, I mean, maybe, you know, you would term it like a C-level PLE. But this is, I think it's probably a challenge for them to try to figure out, like, hey, like, how much do we actually give away for something that's supposed to feel more special than a regular TV show, but less special than, you know, the PLE that we're trying to sell the week after? And I think if it, under those parameters, this felt like they figured out like the right types of matches and the right type of content to fit into that sort of show.
Let me throw this out because I know you are the numbers guy, and
sure.
Okay. The Saturday night's main event, we're throwing out Peacock viewership, okay? Because that is, we will see if we even get any data for that. So strictly what it drew on NBC in December was 1,590,000 viewers. What do you think tonight's will generate? Just a ballpark figure. I think
1,500,000. 1.2.
1.2. Yeah, I think this is going to be down notably from December. I think it tops 1 million, but 1.1, 1.2 million is kind of where I'm leaning towards this. This is not as competitive of a Saturday night for them. I mean, there was no NFL tonight, for instance. There's no college football tonight. Things that they, you know, the level of sports in December was more. There was no UFC tonight even to draw people away. Your competition was Collision, which I think Collision probably would take it on the chin tonight going against Saturday night's main event, which Collision, you can listen to Kate and John's review, but I have seen most of Collision since we're starting a bit later. Very good show tonight. But as you know, Daly's place was in a open air facility, as you know, and man, the amount of comments they made about how cold it was the equivalent of like 6 Celsius, and they were like, the fans.
I'd be begging for 6 Celsius. I'd be in my bathing suit.
We would, okay, but in Florida, like, these fans in the crowd were so bundled up. Jim Ross is talking about how they can see their breath, and then you had Toni Storm basically stripping into her underwear. But I mean, that's the gig. You booked this place in January, so it comes with the territory. But I thought, I haven't seen the main event yet, but this was a very good Collision overall.
Collision course in the Post Wrestling Cafe if you want a full review of that show.
And Way, if people want more of us, more to consume, there's only one way to go here at Post Wrestling. That is by going XL. What does that mean? Jumping on board postwrestlingcafe.com. A $6 pledge gets you 30 days of access. And what will you have for 30 days? Well, you can go live with us Monday, Wednesday, and Friday as soon as those shows end, as soon as Raw is over, as soon as Dynamite's over, and after 3 hours of SmackDown, you want more? Tune in live instantaneously as we go through all the news from that day, review the shows, and then take feedback and questions. And of course, your access to the Post Wrestling Cafe also comes with our extra shows that we put out each month. Already in January, we put out a retrospective look at Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat from 1989, coverage of the Tokyo Dome shows, Way and Kate from Montreal dissecting The People versus GCW, and more to come, including this week for our Double Double and Espresso Cafe members. We are going to be doing a special watch along this Tuesday night, 9 Eastern, of the 1991 Royal Rumble. So that is a special perk for our Double Double Espresso patrons. Sitting in with us will be Brandon from New Jersey as we will chat about the Royal Rumble, the Gulf War, and so much more from 1991.
Yeah. It's been a while since we've done one of these watch-alongs, and it's a perk we're trying to experiment for our like higher-level patrons, just to kind of give them something extra. Hopefully, if you guys are members of those tiers and you can join us on Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern time.
And also, we will make mention that the Royal Rumble pool is open. This is a free contest we do every year, free to enter at postwrestling.com/rumble. You can make your picks in multiple categories. It's always a fun contest that we do each year, run by the great Chris Engler. And the deadline to get your picks in is this Friday night at midnight Eastern. So you have all week. You can do your fantasy matchups, whatever your process is to formulate your picks for the Royal Rumble. But once again, postwrestling.com/rumble, no fee to enter. And we will be going through all of the results the Monday, well, a week from Monday on Rewind to Raw. On to Saturday night's main event, the Frost Bank Center in San Antonio, Texas. Last number from WrestleTix, 15,263. Michael Cole announcing 16,406, so a giant attendance for the second Saturday night's main event in this era. And opening things up is Joe Tessitore with our kind of retro open, and also the arrivals, which included the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, showing up with his Million Dollar Championship. I guess all of these legends, they were asked, hey, whatever belts you have, can you bring them? Because Ted had to have his, Medusa had to bring hers, because how can we possibly refer to Medusa without a 30-year-old clip that has to accompany every WWE appearance for her? And yes.
Somewhat unfortunate that, like, the thing, it is the thing, especially in retrospect from the perspective of the WWE, who is in control of history now in professional wrestling. Her biggest contribution to wrestling is throwing out a title into the trash.
Because of WWE, like, that is the remembered spot. I just think it's so, I mean,
she's not shying away from it, you know?
Like if you have heard her, like, she is way over this, and she's in a position where, obviously, this is what they want her to do. It's what they made her do at the Hall of Fame as well. It's just, it's the running gag with Medusa, but that's that. So Tessitore and Jesse Ventura join us from the Okerland position.
I like it. I really like it. I mean, you know, I you never really know what to call this position, but the Okerland position, the Okerland, is that what they were calling it?
I listened to this multiple times, and Joe Tessitore put the emphasis on land, which I did not quite understand. Joe Tessitore is not just like mispronouncing things, so it felt like
Cole said the same thing.
Yeah, they both seem to be calling it this. I don't think this was, it was to be called Okerlund, but Okerland.
All right, well, why not? I mean, we have the gorilla position, now we have the Okerland position. I like it. I like them using the shot. I do wish, though, like they would use more of a shallow focus look to it, just to kind of really replicate that original shot back then. But, I mean, I don't know how many people would nitpick to that level, like me.
Did you see any of Hulk Hogan's Instagram posts on Nick's wedding tonight?
I did not, no. What did he do?
The one post I saw, he is at his, I'm pretty sure it's at Hogan's Hangout, and he is drinking real American beer with Rob Van Dam, and okay. Tweet and yeah. Just Instagrams like, congratulations, Nick, on your wedding. It's like, is this wedding happening at Hogan's Hangout? Is this this Instagram with Rob Van Dam and not with your son? It was very odd.
Huh.
Okay. I was very curious on.
Well, no. Rob Van Dam's there, I believe, because like.
Oh, I'm sure he's there, friends, but it's just. Like, is this where the wedding's happening at the bar?
Could be. I mean, I don't know. I didn't get an invite.
Anyway, well, there you go. He was drinking his real American beer. Tessitore and Ventura. So Ventura is continuing like the heel shtick. So he just rails on San Antonio, complaining about how they can't handle the cold. So I'm sure he didn't want to weigh in on the weather at Collision. But yeah, cut a promo on Governor Abbott, and I think it's more so the audience. Their belief is that they want the Jesse of the 80s, and it's the heel shtick comes with the Jesse stuff. I feel it's a little kind of out of place, but it's kind of the role they want him to be in. I thought Jesse was a lot smoother in this one than he was a month ago. Like, he's got his notes, but he came across to me like much more just smooth would be the word I would say. He didn't feel like he was like overly thinking stuff or unsure about things. He seemed to have a better flow both here and in the match he called.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree that he felt smoother. I will say maybe my expectations for the first one were a lot less, and therefore, like, to hear any sort of shtick from Jesse, I think I was a lot more excited to hear. Now, like, knowing what he's capable of, I thought he was fine on the show, if maybe a little bit forced, you know, with some of that heel shtick, especially in the match.
On the two count, we will talk about later. It was like he was, like, forcing the... What a miscarriage of justice.
A little bit.
Anyway. Our announcers are Michael.
Still no Hogan on the opening or no Hogan at all on the show.
No. Yeah. Michael Cole and Pat McAfee are our announcers. And you know what was absent, Way? It was a clean mat.
Interestingly enough, they did not sell any, not strike a deal with any sort of hard cider or any beer of any nationality, nor video games or anything like that.
No, and you know what? Sometimes things are sacred, but then when you open up the floodgates, you welcome in the sponsors, and the official chief operating officer of Post Wrestling, I have opened up the floodgates, and we are going to have integration here on our post shows as the Saturday night's main event post show is brought to you by...
Welcome back, our sponsors, NordVPN. Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. Many of our listeners already use Nord to access cheaper prices to AEW pay-per-views or ad-free international versions of WWE programming. But the benefits of a VPN go beyond streaming, especially as online criminal tactics are becoming increasingly sophisticated. One threat that's been on the rise is SIM swapping, where just a bit of your personal info can help criminals impersonate you to your cell provider and virtually transfer your SIM card to their phone. Using a trusted VPN like Nord, especially when using public Wi-Fi, helps keep your data safe from prying eyes on the same network. Over at nordvpn.com/postwrestling, you can sign up for a 2-year plan for just a few dollars per month and get 4 bonus months with our link. Again, nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Try it with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Stay safe and enjoy all the benefits of a secure internet with NordVPN.
Ward off those criminals and get 4 months. That's a good deal.
Where's Mark Shapiro? I think he'd be very proud of that segue. We are for sale. Every square inch of this screen that you see here, your logo will happily plaster for the right price.
We're open for business. Rhea Ripley against Nia Jax opened the show for the Women's World Championship. And this was a cool feature. They had the old Madison Square Garden descending microphone for Lillian Garcia with the lettering of SNME. That was a cool little touch that they had here that I did not notice on the first show. And Jax cuts off the introductions by headbutting Ripley, so we get right into it. Unlike Nia Jax's promo last night, Michael Cole says the winner will be the women's champion. The loser will enter the Royal Rumble field. So a change in plans for Nia's double title quest.
Yeah, I guess maybe they didn't get the memo.
Well, I mean, this really...
What's stopping Rhea from entering the Rumble?
Nothing, according to Nia.
Yeah, you could be double champ. Mm-hmm.
So there's a Samoan drop off the turnbuckle, and Ripley gets lifted onto the shoulders, and she turns it into a code red, not a move you see out of Rhea Ripley. And the match was all about Rhea trying to get the Riptide, and Jax constantly thwarting her. And then Ripley stops an Annihilator, power bombs her, and is trying to get the prism lock but cannot apply it. So Jax is out to the floor. Ripley hits a big high cross and then goes for the Riptide, but Nia does like the Andre with Hogan, landing on top of her, and she hits the Annihilator, but doesn't go for the pinfall. Instead, she tries for a second one, is lifted up for the electric chair, and Jax runs into the corner, misses Ripley, head kick, Riptide, and Rhea retains the championship in 8 minutes in what I thought was like a fine television match. I actually thought this was one of like Nia's better singles matches. I thought, you know, it crowd was hot for this first match, and good. Not great, but very good.
Okay. I'm trying to sense like what, you know, you were trying to aim. You're trying to.
I'm going for a realistic, like this was a, I would say this was better than I thought it was going to be.
Okay. Try to fit that on maybe like, you know, a short little descriptor on the DVD cover perhaps.
Maybe we'll just bring back our rating system, okay?
I thought it was a really good match. Like, I feel comfortable in saying that. In particular, I was impressed by Nia here. I thought she was very good. Like, what I've loved most about maybe her current incarnation, and I think, like, she's really been able to figure it out, especially in-ring, is her sense of urgency when she's on the attack. You know, she's like, she's like, you know, she's a predator. Like, she moves from big move to big move and will often just kind of keep that pace up with little pause in between. It's just like her mauling her opponents, which I think is like, you know, the best way I've seen somebody book her. So credit to the both of them, you know, especially like Rhea in here for trying some new spots, despite what you might consider to be higher stakes in terms of just like an NBC product rather than, you know, something that's on Netflix, for instance. Like Rhea trying that lucha sequence with the springboard Rana attempt into the Code Red. Impressive for somebody of her size. Again, I like the pace of the match. I liked Rhea selling after the first bonsai drop. And, you know, like, this was ultimately a bit of just a showcase match for Rhea, which on an NBC, I think you kind of want. But I also thought it delivered a really worthy sense of struggle, and it felt like a really earned victory for Rhea Ripley. So I thought that they would have this one be extended a little bit to continue on into, like, a rematch. And after this, of course, you could still do it, but this seemed a lot more clean and final to me than I was expecting.
I thought pretty definitive. I thought they just wanted to get Rhea on this show, and I guess they saw Nia Jax as someone that could be in this role. Let me ask you this, because for the December show, a lot of what we were talking about was, okay, they're back on NBC, it's in prime time, and you sort of have that balancing act of there could be newer viewers, lapsed viewers tuning in.
Yeah.
You know what that number was, and it was, you know, 1.6 million. If you're going with the idea of 1.2 million for this show, have you readjusted that? Like, that's less than probably SmackDown will have done on Friday night. Are you kind of shifting that focus that if there are any new viewers on this, it's a extremely small number? Like, this is a lot of your fans that are following this. Like, this is extra. How are you assessing show number two?
Two shows in, I don't think you're ready to just essentially give up, you know, acquiring new viewers just yet.
I'm not saying give up. It's just you're not
I'm saying you're not changing direction. I think you commit to like treating this as a potential new platform to bring in new audiences. That's why you're bringing all these familiar faces. That's why I think a lot of these matches tonight were there to show your new faces to people who might not be familiar with a Jacob Fatu or a Braun Breaker. So I think you keep that up, because there always exists maybe a bigger potential that somebody would watch the show and be a new fan versus like SmackDown. Mm-hmm. Netflix is a different story at this point. Netflix is maybe just as important of a sort of like introductory, you know, feel for audiences. Yeah. But NBC still very much represents
and the Peacock component is significant too, that are watching this as well. Medusa is showing with her old women's championship, as in case you didn't know, for your newer fans, we go back to December of 1995, and there's the title going into the trash can. My question to you, in 30 years, will there be an Impact show on network television, and PCO will be there holding the digital media championship as they replay the Game Changer clip?
So PCO will be 87 by that point?
Yeah, that'll be...
Will an 87-year-old PCO be holding a TNA Digital Media Championship on an Impact show? Yeah,
maybe they'll be at... What's Digital Media?
Yeah, I'm going to say probably no.
The AI Championship.
So, somebody will make it, yeah.
And we also had Mark Henry showing and Gabriel Iglesias. I mean, he's just doing the whole weekend tour.
This guy just won't leave, you know? Like, we're just like, come on, buddy. Like,
we can't hear you again. Yeah. Tony Hinchcliffe and them, they were like, no, one night's enough. We're not traveling to San Antonio.
3 hours.
I'll get wild here. Braun Breaker and Sheamus was next for the Intercontinental Championship. This is the match that Jesse Ventura was on commentary for. And he's got a connection to Sheamus. What is that connection? He was the Raw GM in December of 2009 when Sheamus won a Battle Royal on Raw. And I'm sure they've been pen pals since. I'm sure they keep in touch. And here, 15 years later, he's got a horse in the race here in Sheamus. So I saw this guy at a show I hosted 15 years ago.
I do wonder if, like, Jesse voluntarily brought that up himself and decided to introduce it, or if there was just, like, you know, a researcher back there who's just like, hey, by the way, Jesse, did you know that you were there for this? And this
I'm
and
going
this?
With the latter way. Yeah. I don't think Jesse has many memories of that night. Do you know you also did commentary with Vince McMahon that night? So, yes, he also got bleeped here because he did refer to the WWF superstars of the past, and they did silence the F. So they did get the F out on NBC.
What? Yes. They still have to do that? They still have to bleep out WWF?
I mean, there's probably not too many references we get to WWF by mistake on these broadcasts, but it was very clear that the F part was got silenced here. So,
okay.
The match begins, and Breaker runs around the ring, and he is caught and launched into the timekeeper's area. So then Sheamus leaps off the steps, and to go to break, he is caught in midair with the spectacular-looking spear. And they did the overhead shot, and Pat McAfee just jumped when Braun Breaker hit this spear. It looked really spectacular.
Awesome.
So this is the focus of Sheamus's ribs, which were, of course, he had the injury and came back from. So he was hit with multiple gut busters. Sheamus then hits the 16 beats on the corner or on the apron and then lifts him for a Celtic cross, getting a two count. Then there's the Breakensteiner off the top, and a spear gets caught with a brogue kick, and he goes for the cover, and Braun gets his foot onto the rope in plenty of time, but Jesse Ventura calls this as if they had screwed Sheamus. And this got weird because Ventura's doing his heel shtick while backing the babyface. And I thought this just got to be too confusing kind of just trying to get Jesse's shtick involved here and not really calling what the fan was seeing at home.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, in their pre-production meeting, I'm sure, like, this spot was to look a lot more controversial than it ended up being. But especially after they played the replay, there really was no controversy at all. So it felt like a very forced way to get Jesse to be confrontational and argumentative.
So there is Sheamus setting up for the brogue kick, but his ribs are too damaged to execute it, and he gets nailed with a shoulder block. Then Braun ducks the brogue kick and spears him, winning the match in 11 minutes, 30 seconds, and Ventura disputes the referee's handling of this match. Sheamus gets screwed, according to one person.
One person, in this entire world. I mean, otherwise, I thought it was an excellent match.
Very good. Sheamus, very good.
Sheamus, I think, is like having one of the best runs of his career. Some might argue the best run of his career right now. All of his matches have been so consistently good to the point where you can advertise a Sheamus match, well, against the right opponent, like a Braun Breaker, and it would feel like an attraction. You know, like he's at that stature that now, at least in the WWE, hard hitting, and now something I've been very pleased to see. It's not just maybe how hard he hits, but he's been able to tell stories. He's been able to build wonderful comebacks. So I think he continues to show great chemistry with Braun Breaker, who looked incredible here. You know, when a guy who can just simply make either a clothesline or a spear look like a highlight of a match simply by like how fast he's doing it, I mean, that's incredible. So if the goal here was to give Braun some big exposure on a bigger platform, I thought the match was very successful.
Yeah, I thought it was the best match on the show. I enjoyed this one quite a bit. And then we got more.
So let me ask you, Sheamus fails again to win the IC title, but I mean, like, these are the types of, like, near wins that I think only make him a bigger babyface that people want to see eventually win the IC title, especially they gave him that very controversial, you know, pinfall with the feet on the ropes, okay? How many times do you think they can have Sheamus continue to not win the championship before the audience might give up, you know?
I don't think you want to overdo it, but I think it's I don't think they're in danger of, like, the audience, like, losing faith in this guy. I think they're going to honestly do a pretty similar story with Sami Zayn with the world championship. Like, that feels like something that they could build for a long time, and he continually comes up short. But yeah, with Sheamus, you don't want to do it to such a point where, you know, it negates the big pop at the end, which he should win this belt at some point. But that is kind of it's sort of like once he wins that, to the point you made the other night, was that's kind of the end result. Like, you want to do that when sort of like there's nothing else to follow up with after that.
Yeah, yeah, and they could always come up with something. I mean, Cody has, you know, his big story was winning the championship. He won it. He's still plenty interesting as a figure trying to keep it, right? With Sheamus,
what if he wins this belt and then he's ready to retire and they add a new championship on the men's side? Yeah, and he gets so another 4 years.
He would have reason to wrestle again? Sure, perhaps. I only ask because this feels like we're almost like near the peak of, I think, how much the audience really wants to see Sheamus win this IC title. And I just wonder if we're already so close to, like, the audience wanting it so much. Can they afford to wait much longer before the audience will give up?
I think you have to make it, like, the central focus. Like, maybe this loss is, you know, he'll lose these matches, and then he kind of goes on these, you know, feuds with Ludwig Kaiser. I think you need to make this, like, this is make or break for me. I need this championship or else I shouldn't be here. And it is a big, major focus. And one of these losses should, like, curb that to be now this is the central focus for the Sheamus character. And you map it out to be, like, one more showdown. And it's, like, title versus career type of thing. Like, I think, like, that is where you want to go with this. And make it in such a way that it's, like, if you were to do something like title versus career, I think that could be, like, a really compelling one, because you could see Sheamus, like, winning or losing that.
I want to see him get so obsessed with it that he ends up, like, having to turn heel, potentially. Eventually, at some point, because he's doing great as a babyface right now. But you might breathe new life into him by having him so obsessed with it that he eventually turns heel in order to try to get it and retain it. I mean, he's become, I think, one of the, you know, I never saw this for him at this stage of his career, but he's more interesting now to me than he's ever been.
They showed Ted DiBiase and Jim Duggan in the crowd, and not to be outdone, 83-year-old Dory Funk Jr.
Yeah. They should,
not Hoss Funk, Dory Funk Jr.
Was that what he was called?
That was his original WWE name when he was teaming with his brother.
Oh, my. Hoss Funk.
Yes. Huh. Maybe he'll get a match. Maybe he'll be in the Rumble next week.
He would have to win it because I don't think he's going over the top rope.
Could be.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, as myself and Wei Ting will be providing full shows containing news of the day, questions, and so much more, going live on those nights for patrons. Plus, we will have coverage of Wrestle Kingdom 19, Wrestle Dynasty, The People versus GCW, TNA Genesis, a Rewind Away retrospective on the Ric Flair Ricky Steamboat feud of 1989, all of your regular shows, a Daredevil primer, and throughout the month of January, you get a free month if you sign up for an annual subscription. $6 a month at postwrestlingcafe.com. Shawn Michaels comes out. One of his better dressed appearances, I think.
So
he looked pretty presentable here.
We were right about the cowboy hat and blazer combo. Okay. Now he did.
I said t-shirt.
You said t-shirt. I forget what I said, but we also believed cowboy boots, and there were no cowboy boots from Shawn tonight.
That's true. Yes. Well, he was going to need some comfortable footwear for the end of this.
True.
He is here to get two signatures onto the contract. Out comes Kevin Owens, and he has gone with the Cody Sucks Eggs shirt this week. I thought maybe this would be the big ultimate shirt for next weekend, but he comes out. This was a. I wonder if they are missing the boat by not selling some of these like custom shirts.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're selling some of them, if not all of them. Yeah. They're selling everything, dude. Are you kidding me?
Okay. Well,
they
should be.
Every shirt available. Now, this one, I mean, like, how much of a lifespan does this have, you know, beyond next Sunday?
Well, I'm sure the Dusty Sucks Eggs shirt got, like, generations of people
wearing
those.
Yeah, but will Cody Sucks Eggs shirt be relevant beyond whatever? Like, I'm sure they're selling it all. Yes, yes.
Then, to maybe answer our question about how they view this audience and first-timers, we got something I have literally never seen in all my years of watching wrestling. We had a graphic explaining how a ladder match works.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the easiest to explain stipulation match that they have. There's a belt hanging and you have to grab it. But we had all these particulars of what can be used. You don't say the ladders can be weapons, you say. But yes, that's how the ladder match works, folks. And both men enter. Cody signs the contract immediately, but Owens puts it off. He talks about how pissed he was at Cody's comment last night about how he always takes the easy way out, but I spared you with your injured knee at Bash in Berlin last year to try and preserve our friendship. And when the going got tough, you quit WWE. And Cody just shuts him down, doesn't want to listen to him talk, and just tells him to sign the contract. Cody warns him, everyone will know I'm the rightful champion, and all this attention that you've had, it will all be gone after I win. I was the one that deserved all this for the last 10 years. And Michaels pipes in, it sounds like you're jealous, Kevin. And Owens is furious at this comment and says that, Shawn, you're just like Cody. You quit when things got tough. And I'm making this, pointing to the Winged Eagle title, mean more than you ever did. Mocks him for losing his smile and says Cody's going to lose his smile and his title at the Royal Rumble as he signs the contract. And the two then have to hand over their championships to be hung above this ring in San Antonio to then be flown to Indianapolis.
They're flying the whole arena to Indianapolis.
Yeah, they're just going to airlift this arena as is and this ladder to Indianapolis. And Michaels wishes them luck, and then Owens sucker punches Cody, and he goes to deliver a package pile driver onto Michaels, but Cody stops Kevin Owens, and it culminates with Shawn Michaels hitting Owens with the sweet chin music. And yeah, I thought for sure this was going to mean, I thought the show was going to end with Owens like attacking Michaels in the parking lot or something, getting his revenge, but there was no follow-up to this, at least not on this night. It was just Owens taking the super kick.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so for that reason, I really wondered if I understand why they did it. Okay, it's San Antonio. You want to send the crowd home happy. You want to give them some Shawn Michaels physicality. But I guess if your goal is to build Owens as a credible challenger, was this really like a necessary spot to have?
I didn't think it was.
Was simply like threatening Shawn Michaels not productive enough if your goal was to build to Kevin Owens as, again, a credible challenger, a threatening challenger. But that's not the only goal here, John. Like, the goal here is to entertain this audience and to get a big reaction with some Shawn Michaels physicality. This would be the type of segment where, like, if Kevin Owens had some sort of, like, underling, some sort of second, you know, or a manager or something, they'd be the person taking the super kick. But he doesn't. He's a lone wolf type of guy. And ultimately, it's not going to hurt him that much. It's not going to affect, really, anything.
It was an easy pop for the crowd. I don't think it's a huge thing. It was just obviously done for the moment. Now, if they do something beyond this with Shawn and Kevin Owens, I'll take all of this back.
I don't see it. I just don't see Shawn coming back unless he maybe Saudi Arabia. You know, we know he too has a price. Shawn versus Kevin Owens in Saudi, I guess is possible.
Maybe this economy is not treating Shawn so well.
That is right. Yeah, he's got mortgages to pay for.
You know what?
He made some bad investments in the past.
Maybe he's
a crypto guy now.
Maybe he's got some foreign investments that are going to have tariffs attached, and he could be in a lot of trouble. Maybe some of these executive orders are not going to be kind to Shawn Michaels' way of life.
Could be, yeah. I mean, it was an overall fun segment.
I bet you this will be the peak quarter of the whole show.
I can see that in terms of star power. I mean, having Cody and Shawn.
This was promoted above everything else on this show. Like, this to me was the main event segment.
Yes, it was. I was expecting a bit more from Cody in terms of just like, interesting promo. Like, he did give us a 10 on the intensity scale, but in terms of content, I didn't get that much out of him. Got some good lines from Kevin Owens about Shawn Michaels and the championship.
In fairness, we've got 5.5 hours of TV before the Rumble, so.
I mean, that is true.
And he is on Raw Monday, so maybe that's our big go-home promo.
It's Atlanta, yeah.
Yeah, it's Atlanta. Braun Strowman and Jacob Fatu. We had the Fatu-Tama walk and talk backstage, and we get right into things where Fatu hits a suicide dive, go through the commercial. Braun throws him across the ring, and then we get the Strowman Express. And this man had to run around this ring twice. And
three times. I think, didn't he?
The first one, he didn't do the whole perimeter, but the second one, the second and third, he went the whole way around this. And after one shoulder tackle, he comes around again, and this time Fatu lifts him and just delivers a Samoan drop onto the desk and proceeds to roll Braun into the ring and hits him with 6 consecutive hip attacks to the point that Dan Engler throws the match out and disqualifies Jacob Fatu after 9 minutes. I thought at this moment, I thought this was a super disappointing end to a match that was, I was looking forward to seeing more of this match. But afterwards, they did this incredible angle, I thought, with Fatu, where he gets a chair, Nick Aldis and security are out, and he continues attacking Strowman, who is now bleeding all over his face, and Fatu hits the double springboard moonsault. And what does the crowd do? They cheer. Michael Cole is calling for handcuffs or a stun gun. Pat McAfee thinks they need a taser, so the crowd chants one more time. Jacob Fatu does it. This crowd is deafening. I felt like I was watching a private party here getting beaten down. And Jacob Fatu returns to the ring again, and they cheer as he hits a third moonsault. I don't know if this was the reaction they thought. I don't know how you could not expect this to get the kind of reaction it did.
Of course it was the reaction that they expected. John. They booked this match wanting to replicate Braun Strowman versus Bronson Reed, and they did that to a T here. You know, Bronson Reed did his however many tsunamis, right, repeatedly, and got a babyface reaction as a result of it, but was still ultimately presented as a heel coming out of it. The goal isn't necessarily to, like, make them heel or babyface. It's to make them stars. And I thought the segment directly accomplished that.
I thought this segment was great. I thought that this was the best utilization of Jacob Fatu so far at the end of all of this. And, yeah, this came off well. The match was... Yeah, I mean, you had your DQ finish, but this was more about the angle after the fact.
This was better than a proper match would have been, you know? Like, again, this is something that's memorable. Again, following that Bronson Reed formula with Strowman, again, being the perfect victim to make these guys look amazing. He's a big, you know, like, monster that's been slayed.
Are we going to get a double moonsault onto a car outside in a parking lot? Like, take that from... All their ideas for Bronson Reed get transferred to Jacob Fatu this year.
Basically, yeah. I mean, they really like did wonderful work with Bronson Reed. Jacob Fatu, I think, has even more upside than a Bronson Reed. And I guess like being on SmackDown or being on an NBC, it feels a little bit fresher already. And people really want to see it with I think, Jacob Fatu. But clearly, like giving him a push like this, giving him like the promo time that we're seeing from him now, they are strapping the rocket to this dude. And I'm very
curious guy. Unlike Bronson Reed, they're going to have a way tougher time keeping this guy a heel if that is their goal. Like
That's okay.
And then run with it. That's great. But yeah. if that is the hope, is like a Bronson Reed type of follow-up where ultimately he's the heel. Like, I just think everyone is gravitating towards this guy. They love the promos. They love the physicality. Like, all the things are clicking with this guy in the audience. Like, this was just felt like a release for this crowd to just have a segment where the company was imploring you to get behind this guy.
Yeah. Again, like, I don't know if the point at this right now is so much to like make sure you're booing or cheering him. I think it's to make sure that you can eventually, and for many people this is already the case, but that you can buy him in a status next to a Cody, next to, you know, Roman Reigns. You know, like, these are all potential matchups for him that could happen as soon as in a few months' time, right? Like, what do you see for Jacob Fatu at WrestleMania? What's big enough for him?
I mean, it's like not Roman level, but like maybe him and Solo Sikoa is like something that you're going to have this battle for control. Like, maybe you're going to try and put these two together, but one is surpassing the other. It's hard to say what they'll have him nailed down to.
Yeah. You know, like a match against like a Jey Uso, for instance, I think would feel plenty big, you know, with both of their statuses. But I also think like
they'll get brother versus brother right this year.
Cousins, but you know, I guess close enough.
Are they not brothers?
No, their parents are brothers. Their parents are twins.
Okay. In my head, they were brothers.
No. Okay. Rikishi's twin is Jacob's.
Sorry. I'm thinking of Solo. I was talking of Solo here. Sorry. It's late, folks.
It's a very, very big family tree. Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, then we had the Brainbusters show. And so Tully, way better seats from WWE than he got from TNA on Thursday. So that's nice. Yeah. They introduce Arn, and it was like Tully realizes, like, oh, I better get up now because I'm not getting a separate introduction or anything like that. So he just joined in here and got up. Maybe these two will have a comeback match.
Doubtful. No? Yeah, doubtful. I'm still waiting for Arn to actually, like, he's not really, you know, didn't we all think like he would show up to WWE to do something?
Yeah, I mean, outside of that SummerSlam pep talk he gave Cody, like, that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, well.
Well, enjoy his retired life, I guess.
Maybe at some point, Cody's going to need a talking to about, you know, a firearm or something in self-defense, and yes. Arn will be there. Cole then acknowledges Gene Okerlund as he throws to the Okerland position, and Ventura remarks that it's getting very vicious. Back in my day, we tried to keep it professional. It's too violent now for Jesse. And that was it. They just threw right back. We had the video with Paul Levesque contacting iShow Speed, and they just happened to be recording both of them on their respective phones. And he's going to come to the Rumble, and he has backstage access to stream.
Yeah. So. I mean, to you and I, that might not sound like such a big deal, but...
Oh, no, this is a huge thing for them.
It's massive.
Yeah. Oh, it's a tremendous outlet that they're going to have for, you know, that he's just going to be streaming content for the entirety of the show next week. I think it's actually a very, very smart idea.
Whenever you see Levesque actually be attached to these segments, you know it's something that, like, the company is taking seriously. And as another way to, you know, try to get that younger audience, like they're trying to do with like a Travis Scott or whomever. I mean, it is a very smart business decision.
And that brings us to the final match of the night, Gunther and Jey Uso for the World Heavyweight Championship. And Gunther just nails him immediately with a boot. They come back from break. Gunther is controlling him, hits a shotgun, dropkick, and powerbomb, continues to dominate. They go through a second commercial break, and finally, Jey fires back. But anytime he gets anything going, Gunther just shuts him down, but then he lands a super kick and gets a two count, and this crowd is with him for all of these near falls, which were pretty much the strength of the match, was the audience getting into these near falls. He sidesteps a shotgun, and Jay hits the hip attack. Then didn't have quite the effect of his cousin, Jacob. And Gunther stops the Uso splash, chopping Jay down. Jay manages a Liger bomb for a two count, then a Hurricane Rana and spear, and this crowd goes nuts for this kick out. He hits a super kick. He hits a spear. He lands the Uso splash, like everything outside of a taser here. And Gunther kicks out, and the way the camera was, you see Gunther roll toward Jay, and he is so loudly communicating something to Jay as they've got like 90 seconds to go here, and this is a show where you do have the hard out. And
no, this isn't Netflix.
Yeah, there's no overrun here. So Jay runs for a spear, but gets caught with a power bomb, follow-up power bomb, and Gunther stacks him in 16 minutes and 40 seconds. But as we laid out, and Michael Cole did a great job of conveying this, was Gunther came very close to losing, and he sold the shock of like how much Jay brought the fight. So that was sort of he lost, but he gained further respect from Gunther. So a very good match. I didn't have it ahead of Breaker and Sheamus, but I thought in particular, like the last 5 minutes, the near falls were exceptionally strong. They had a great crowd reaction for them. And it does tell you, like, this audience is very much with Jay. He is someone you can eventually see in this role of like winning one of these championships at some point.
Very much so, yeah, yeah. I mean, I personally felt like there wasn't much of a chance for Jey Uso to win, although I saw plenty of discussion from people who thought that there might have at least been, you know, I don't know, higher than 10% chance at least. To me, what I was expecting out of this was, can you get people to at least bite for some of these near falls? And they absolutely did for some of them. I thought otherwise it was like a very good, you know, Gunther dominant type of performance. And I think the biggest difference from this, between this and another Gunther match, is that you have Jey Uso, who has an incredible connection with the crowd. So by simply being who he is from that entrance onwards, and this was a great entrance this week because he had that little kid doing the yeeting with him. Mm-hmm. From the entrance onwards, I thought this match was already successful because this crowd wanted Jey to win so badly. So in the end, it resulted, I think, in a great showcase for Jey on his long-term quest towards the championship, and a great showcase for Gunther, who is currently enjoying his championship run.
Yeah, and at the end of this, I mean, for Monday's Raw, again, zero mention of this Roman Reigns segment that they had promoted, and nothing teasing Goldberg either. So I was curious if tonight we would get either of those. I just, the Roman Reigns one is very strange. It's just so unlike them to announce a big segment as they did a few weeks ago, and there's been no mention this week of it at all, like not even anything in passing. So Raw in Atlanta has Logan Paul's debut on Raw, the War Raiders against Dominic and JD McDonagh for the tag titles, and the appearance by Cody Rhodes is all that is officially announced. But Atlanta is a huge market for them. It's their first time back since that big Bad Blood show. So they will have 10,000 people by Monday night, I'm sure of that. So it should be a really hot crowd in Atlanta on Monday night, which is the go home Raw for the Royal Rumble.
And we'll see between now and then if they announce anything major. Again, we're expecting Goldberg. We're expecting Roman Reigns. Probably some sort of 2K25 cover announcement attached to it as well. At least that's what was teased. Whether or not we'll actually get it, or if plans have changed, I guess we'll find out soon enough. But the Rumble push starts now, which means essentially the road to WrestleMania kind of starts now.
Yes, it does. And the road to feedback begins this moment, because we have a few people who want to chime in with their thoughts on the show from tonight.
Yeah. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling. Let's start with a super chat here, John, from Jake from the Windy City, very loyal patron and listener of ours. Jake says, sends $5. Thank you very much for that, Jake. He says, The Pat and Jesse combo is off. I feel like Graves would be better at bantering and playing off of Jesse. And NBC accidentally had the Spanish feed at the start. Yes, several people mentioned that to us.
Oh.
They started with the Spanish commentary instead.
That's not so bad. I would love the Spanish feed for like all the big near falls at the end of the world heavyweight title match.
Interesting, yeah. And Jesse. And Graves, would you have preferred Graves for any?
I think Graves is to me, just for my taste, much, much superior to Pat McAfee. But like I don't find Pat and Jesse to be a turn off either.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I feel like we know the reasons why Graves isn't there. I think he said it enough himself. He's not famous enough. Right.
Yeah.
I think Pat is so bad, though.
He's perfectly fine in the role. Yeah. And like, folks, like it's like this guy is he is more popular than like most of this roster. And some would say just about all of this roster. Like his reach is a giant benefit. Like they are not putting Corey Graves above a Pat McAfee when Pat McAfee is available.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Jesse from Texas, who writes, Jesse, excuse me, Governor Ventura, may be the next legend to not be welcome back to Saturday night's main event. Maybe he was having flashbacks to Hogan and Andre, but he just went all in on a clear two count. It was just awkward, and Michael Cole was laughing at him when he left. I could watch Jacob Fatu do that moonsault forever. He babyfaced himself by the end of that match. Hate to see a DQ, but love seeing the moonsault. I thought the show overall was fine, fast-paced, maybe not as good as the one last month, but it's good to see them get different performers on the show. I might be jumping ahead, but when looking at the Women's Royal Rumble, how do they not go with someone who has won it before? Charlotte, Bianca, maybe a returning Becky would have to be the favorites. I've heard of an EO Rhea match for Mania, but where do you see them going?
I'm thinking it's somebody making a return. I think Charlotte, Tiffany Stratton might be, for me, maybe a front runner at this point for at least a Tiffany Stratton opponent. If Stratton manages to keep the title for Rhea. So what? I've heard maybe like Bianca be a rumored name, which actually seems kind of strange now, given that she's a tag person and she's doing this thing with like Jade and Naomi. Who else could you see for Becky, like, what do you think her chances are?
I think that, like, Becky would be high up there as well. Like, I really would not do it with Charlotte, but I would just hold that off maybe till the chamber. But that could be their role, to just go with Charlotte and have her in the heel role against Tiffany Stratton anyway. So
Yeah. I don't know if we've seen enough, honestly, for me to say like, hey, like this is going to be the match. So, but I do think it will probably be one of the names you mentioned.
All right, let's continue.
Let's go to Brian in New Jersey, who says, I chose to watch this show over Collision after learning Hulk Hogan wouldn't be there. After this week, my tolerance for the convicted felon and his sycophants is below sea level low. But enough about that scum. I thought Saturday night's main event was full of a lot of good wrestling and what felt like less focus on nostalgia. Jacob Fatu's attack on Braun Strowman reminded me of Bronson Reed's attack on Rollins, a white-hot monster moment. Braun Breaker and Sheamus had a heck of a fight. I thought the other two title matches were quite good, though it felt like the finish to the main event was rushed. The F in WWF from Ventura wasn't bleeped for me on NBC. Also, for the first few minutes on NBC, the Spanish announce team was overlaid. Yes. So I switched over to Peacock until I heard the audio was fixed on NBC.
Well, it was absolutely on my feed, but I was watching it on the YouTube, the international feed. Next, we go to Alex Patel. For everybody that complains about Battle of the Belts being inconsequential, these last two shows have been completely useless in terms of anything other than feeling like a house show. Nothing of consequence ever happens. I disagree there, especially for the first show. I think you could... Like at the very least here is that number one, unlike the Battle of the Belts, you have tons of major stars that are like, when did we ever get a AEW championship match on any of those Battle of the Belts? I don't even know if there was one, to be quite honest. You had your big segment here for the Royal Rumble. I'm not saying this was as star laden as the last show. But I would say two shows in, these feel much more of consequence than they ever had for Battle of the Belts.
Yes. Two shows in, I think, is a good caveat because it remains to be seen, like, I don't know, a year from now, like, will they give as much reverence to Saturday night's main event as they have for these past two? But at the moment, the big difference to me, John, is that they build to Saturday night's main event. Battle of the Belts at this point just kind of gets announced, you know, like, I don't know. Well, so they're not even doing them anymore.
No,
right?
It's done.
It's done, okay. But at the time, there's just like a bunch of extra matches. Now, some matches do get the build, but they hardly feel as built, for instance, as like Cody and Gunther, for instance. You know, Nia and Rhea was a pretty quick job, so I'll give them that. Gunther, Jacob too, was also a very quick job. But both of them, I thought they delivered at least enough. Like with Jacob and Strowman, they kind of just sold it off of their size, which is, again, more than I think we've received for like a mid-card match on a Battle of the Belts. So, again, this is, at this point, like a C-level PLE. But I still think that they're putting effort into, you know, making them feel like satisfying, complete stories.
Yeah. And ultimately, it's going to be like, The viewership that these garner are going to determine if these are consequential or not. If people are tuning into these, then they're of consequence. And if these numbers are sinking, then they're inconsequential, obviously, to your audience. So you kind of have to look at what's working and what's not. And a year from now, are these going to be priority shows for WWE? Maybe, maybe not.
The consequence is also you're spreading the word about the Royal Rumble next weekend, which that middle segment with Sean was designed to do. I also think long term, like, again, I thought there was a lot of investment using this airtime to promote a Braun Breaker. Certainly Jacob Fatu had, I think, a pivotal moment in his development as a single star on this particular show, and Rhea Ripley getting some exposure as well.
All right, but thank you for all the feedback from everybody, and that's going to wrap up the show. But again, out tonight is Collision Course with Kate and John Cena as they are going through the show from Daly's Place. And then we are back on Monday night, minutes after Raw goes off the air. We will be live at postwrestlingcafe.com going through all of the day's news, a review of Raw, and taking your questions as well. So that is going to wrap it up for us. Thanks to everybody for staying up with us as we chatted Saturday night's main event. And that is all for our review. Good night. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. postwrestlingcafe.com.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close.
Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.